Hare Krishna. Just a few words of introduction. One time, Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj was here for Srila Prabhupada's Tirubhav Titi Mahotsav Disappearance Festival. And he mentioned that the first book he got was the Nectar of Devotion. And he read the Nectar of Devotion and then became a devotee. And as we've been studying in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains in the 6th chapter, Purvabhya Sena Denaiva, that as a result of one's previous devotional practice, one is again attracted to the devotional principles. So we can see this is in the life of Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, this is an example of what Krishna is explaining here, that one very quickly becomes attracted to the devotional principles. And we saw, after becoming a devotee, in the life of His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj and the reciprocation that he receives from Srila Prabhupada, that in a very short time he was given very intimate service of Srila Prabhupada and very major responsibilities in the preaching mission. And we're considering ourselves very fortunate. We could say that we couldn't find a more qualified teacher to teach us the nectar of devotion. And His Holiness Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, as well as we're aware that he has so many responsibilities as a leader in ISKCON, spiritual leader, a member of the GBC, senior member, and a spiritual master, and also he's actually the spiritual head of our Mayapur Institute, because he's the chairman of our board of directors. And so we're feeling that this is the great kindness of Maharaj, and this type of kindness is perhaps the best type of mercy he can show us, that personally he comes and participates as a teacher in the courses. And so we're very much appreciative that Maharaj has taken time out of his busy schedule to do that. On behalf of the Institute and all the students, we'd like to sincerely welcome Maharaj to my parents.
Thank you. Jai Srila Prabhupada, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. First, I'd like to get acquainted with all of you. You can see there's the names of all the students here are here. Oh, both the names are here. Okay, so those who are initiated, I'll announce your initiated name, and those who are not, naturally I can call you only by one name. Imriksh Vigal Vigal. You're from which country?
Slovakia.
Hare Krishna. And Trilokatma Das?
I'm from Czech Republic.
Oh, wonderful. It keeps shifting. Okay, better this way. Then Pandava Das?
Pandapur.
Oh, you're from Pandapur. Govinda Prem Das.
I'm from Kenya.
You're from Kenya. Jagamurti Das. Okay. Okay. Yeah, thank you, Jagamurti Prabhu. Niyal Yoen Tohak. Did I pronounce your name right? Niall. You're from Ireland. Okay. Okay, Niall. Niall Owen?
Owen.
Oh, Niall Owen. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, Tohak is all right. And Rupa Goswami Das?
I'm from Paryatra.
You're from?
Paryatra.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Madan Gopal Das.
I'm from South Africa.
Oh. Hare Krishna. Gaurav Sharma.
Yes. Yeah. I'm from Punjab.
Okay. Gita Nagari Das. Oh. Jivananda Das. Oh, Hare Krishna. You're a proper disciple.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm honored to have you in class. And at the same time, I'm embarrassed. I'll be kind of tongue-tied to speak in front of you. Thank you, Jivananda Prabhu. Yeah. Ram Keshav Das?
I'm from Delhi.
You're from Delhi. Milan Tomazin? You,
I'm from Slovenia.
Slovenia. Milan is a... Is there... What, does it have any meaning in Slovakia?
No.
No. In Sanskrit, Milan is meeting. Balroop Das?
I'm from Kannada.
Okay. Saranga Thakur Das?
I'm from Croatia.
Croatia, Krishna. I saw you yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah. Gokulendra Das? Krishna. Prem Gaur Sundar Das?
From my community.
Okay, very good. Rupa Vilas Das?
There is two Rupa Vilas in the room.
So you're hesitating. Which one?
Okay. From Portugal.
Oh, very good. Hare Krishna, Rupa Vilas Prabhu. Jai Keshavada, no, I'm sorry, Rick van der Horst, must be from Holland.
Yes.
Jai Keshavadas, yeah, Hare Krishna. Vladimir Balasmi, when's from Russia?
Israel.
Oh, I see. Okay, Vladimir, okay, very good. Very good. Rupa Vilas Patel.
From New
Vrindavan. Oh, very good. You're born in Krishna consciousness?
Yeah, born in Vrindavan.
Yeah, very good. So that's the difference. You're Rupa Vilas Das and Rupa Vilas Patel. Your parents are initiated, Rupa Vilas?
They were by
I see, okay. They live in New Vrindavan
yes.
still?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Then I must have seen you. Tebogo Medisha. Oh no, Prem Vikas Das. You're from?
Pretoria,
okay.
Oh, good.
South Africa. Wonderful. Srinivas Gopal Das from Mayapur. Oh, great. Panchajana Das
from South Africa.
From South Africa. Are you also from Pretoria? Yeah. Ameyatma Das
from
New Zealand. Oh, Hare Krishna. Ritudeep Gauradas. Okay, Hare Krishna. From Mayapur.
Kolkata.
Oh, Kolkata. Okay, right, that's true. Yeah. Prem Gopal Das. From Kolkata. Very good. Then Charu Govinda Das. Kolkata. Radha Vallabh Das. Oh, yeah, right. Then Ghanashyam Ananda Das.
Yes, Sikh Maharaj. He went back to Kolkata.
Okay. Amal Puran Das, Kumar Lila Das, also from Calcutta. Then Vishwambhar Kripa Das, Iskand?
Kolkata.
Oh, good. Krishna Chaitanya Das, Berlin. Prem Harinam Das,
Croatia.
From Croatia. And Gorsundar Das,
from
Ukraine. Very good. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Welcome to the world of nectar devotion. As Atul Krishna Prabhu mentioned, that Nectar of Devotion was the first book that I got, that I received. And Nectar of Devotion, just practically the first page of Nectar of Devotion, changed my whole concept and opened up a new world for me. And what was so striking was that two things became very clear. One is, God is a person. I think most of the people in today's world, when they pursue spiritual, some sort of spiritual inclination, they tend to become impersonalists, because the impersonalistic influence is so prominent that whenever you make any approach, spiritual approach, you end up becoming an impersonalist, thinking that the ultimate spiritual thing is light or some energy or something, Brahman. That is the... And so I also was affected by that, especially Indian spiritual world was very much affected by Shankaracharya's impersonalism. And Prabhupada's presentation just very clearly indicated that God is a person, and that is Krishna. Krishna is God. It's not that Krishna is something like the way the impersonalists think, that by achieving perfection or samadhi, you become God. Like, that concept was immediately smashed. And the other thing that was so striking was that I used to think naturally that liberation was the goal. And I got such a clear understanding, Prabhupada gave such a clear understanding of liberation, that there are two types of liberation, like positive and negative, or rather, at first, there are five kinds of liberation. I never heard such a clear definition of liberation. And there are two types of liberation. Out of those five, one is negative and other four are positive. So, and that kind of just impressed me so much, like, you know, a whole lot of misconception was just washed away, just in one stroke. And I found that books, I mean, I became so engrossed that I just kept on reading. I started reading the book when I went home. I went to the Calcutta temple, and actually I wanted to have a Bhagavad Gita, but they didn't have a Bhagavad Gita. So I told them to give me any book. And probably the size of nectar of devotion was similar to Bhagavad Gita. They offered me that book and I just took that and started reading. And I kept on reading till I fell asleep. And then when I woke up in the morning, first thing I did is pick up the book and start reading. And while reading, I started to picture myself in practicing all these activities in ISKCON. So mentally I kind of joined ISKCON. And anyway, that's how it all began. And it's also, I would like to mention that Mayapur is the place where I came and became a devotee. After reading Nectar of Devotion, I came to Mayapur, sort of out of curiosity, because I didn't think of joining at that time, because Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I thought I would wait until Srila Prabhupada came back, and when Srila Prabhupada came back, then I would offer myself to him. And I thought that until then, I would visit the places of Mahaprabhu's pastimes and Krishna's pastimes. And the first place I went to was, or first place I came to was Mayapur. And I came in the evening and the next morning I shaved up. I shaved up, went to Ganga, took a bath, threw away my old clothes, put on dhoti and kurta. And that was it. It's a very, very special book. It's a very powerful book. So I'm very happy that Atul Krishna Prabhu gave me this opportunity to teach Nectar of Devotion here today. Thank you very much, Atul Krishna Prabhu. So we'll... how does it go? Should I go in one stretch till 1 o'clock?
You can take questions as you go if you like.
Or no, I mean, should you get a break in between? Or do you find it tiring sitting for 2 hours?
We were taking a break after an hour or so for 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay, just to kind of stretch in. Anyway, we'll see. So, how many of you, do you all have your books with you, copies of Nectar of Devotion? Okay, so I would start off with you all reading some paragraphs, right? How many of you like to read? Okay, so... we'll start from this corner. Yeah, from here. Just one paragraph. You read this first paragraph.
The Nectar of Devotion is a summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita, which was written in Sanskrit by Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was the chief of the 6 Goswamis, who were the direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he first met Lord Chaitanya, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada was engaged as a minister in the Mohammedan government of Bengal. He and his brother Sanatan were then named Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik, respectively, and they held responsible posts as ministers of Nawab Hussain Shah. At that time, 500 years ago, the Hindu society was very rigid, and if a member of the Brahmin caste accepted the service of a Mohammedan ruler, he was at once rejected from Brahmin society. That was the position of 2 brothers, Dabir Khas and Sakar Malik. They belonged to the highly situated Saraswat Brahmin community, but they were ostracized due to their acceptance of ministerial posts in the government of Hussain Shah. It is the grace of Lord Chaitanya that he accepted these 2 exalted personalities as his disciples and raised them to the position of Goswamis, the highest position of Brahminical culture. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya accepted Haridas Thakur as a disciple, although Haridas happened to be born of a Mohammedan family. And Lord Chaitanya later on made him the Acharya of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you, very good. So from this we understand that nectar of devotion was not only the translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but it was kind of a summary study. This is not the same kind of work of Srila Prabhupada. This is not the regular work of Srila Prabhupada. Like the way Prabhupada translated Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. How did Prabhupada do that? First of all, they are done verse by verse, then word for word translation, transliteration, and translation and purport. Nectar of Devotion and Krishna Book are two major works of Srila Prabhupada, where Srila Prabhupada just gave the kind of, it's not actually a summary study alone. It is, Prabhupada's purport is very much there. But Prabhupada did not give this book just as a verse by verse presentation, but just a general reading. And now, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the book that was written by Srila Rupa Goswami. And it has been pointed out, who is Rupa Goswami? Rupa Goswami was the chief of six Goswamis. He was the principal of the head of the six Goswamis, you can say. Most prominent of the six Goswamis. Like, although Sanatana Goswami was senior to Rupa Goswami, they were two brothers. Like, Sanatana Goswami was the elder brother. But in this context, Rupa Goswami's name is coming first, which is unusual for Indian culture. In Indian culture, the senior person would be mentioned first. So in that respect, Sanatana Goswami's name should have been mentioned prior to Rupa Goswami. But when we name the six Goswamis, how do we Rupa Goswami, then Sanatana Goswami, and so forth. Now why? Mainly because Rupa Goswami surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu before Sanatana Goswami. Rupa Goswami retired from his royal responsibilities first, and then Sanatana Goswami followed. As it has been mentioned in this chapter, Rupa Goswami was holding a very, very important position in the Muslim government at the time. And the Brahminical society, the Hindu society actually was so rigid that if anybody had anything to do with the Muslims, they were ostracized from the society. So Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, although they are coming from very exalted Brahminical families, but they were ostracized. Ostracized in a sense, they were practically treated as a Muslim. And treated as a non-Hindu. And that was an unfortunate thing in the Hindu culture, because this rigidity and insensitivity and cruelty to a great extent caused many people to convert into Islam, rejecting Hindu culture, rejecting their Hindu identity. Can you imagine if such brilliant personalities became Muslims? I mean, what a loss it would have been to the Hindu community. But these people are so insensitive. These brahmanas of that time. That was, you see, here we have to understand one thing, that the Supreme Personality appears when there is a dharmasya glani, when there is a decline in religious principles. So, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the religious scenario of India was in a very, very precarious condition. Materially, it was very prosperous. Like Navadvip, it has been described in Chaitanya Bhagavat that hundreds of thousands of people used to take bath in each ghat of Navadvip. That means, what was the population of Navadvip? Like thousands upon thousands of people were bathing in the Ganga. So there must have been millions of people. Like it was a major city at that time. And they were materially very opulent, very prosperous. But there was an eclipse of religious principles, the Vedic spiritual culture. So at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. Another thing we have to remember here, that these personalities are not ordinary personalities. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, He comes along with His associates. Just like Krishna came, did He come alone? No, He came along with His associates. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also came along with His associates. Sangha Pangastra Parshadam. Parshadam. His associates He came along with. He brought His associates with. He brought His abode, Dham, along with Him. So these personalities like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami and all the principal associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all came from the spiritual sky. And there is a book by Kavi Karnapur called Gaur Ganadesh Deepika that is actually describing who are these associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Krishna's pastimes. They all came from Krishna's pastimes. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, they came. So these are very, very exalted spiritual personalities. Yes, you can read now the next paragraph.
Lord Chaitanya's principle is universal. Anyone who knows the science of Krishna and is engaged in the service of the Lord is accepted as being in a higher position than a person born in a family of a Brahmana. There is the original principle accepted by all Vedic literatures, especially by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The principle of Lord Chaitanya's movement in educating and elevating everyone to the exalted post of Goswami is called the next devotion.
Very good. Yeah. So, what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give is the highest spiritual understanding. And what is the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas? What is the essence of the Vedic wisdom, Vedic knowledge? Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, when one gets to know Krishna, we have to understand that he has understood the entire Vedic scriptures. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave that understanding directly. Like that's another thing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation. You see, in other ages, this development of understanding was gradual. Like naturally, like from class 1 you go to class 2, class 3 you go to class 4. And like that, you gradually progress in your studies. And then you finish your school, then you go to college, and college to university. But that was not the case with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and gave the highest. Say, for example, what's the highest? So the highest is the university education. And in the university also, what's the highest? The PhDs, right? So, And it takes a long time, gradual process of coming to that, and very few students make it to the college. Even less make it to the university. And in the university, very few become PhDs. Right? So it is natural that development keeps on becoming more and more thin. Number keeps on reducing as you go up. But the uniqueness of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation is that he gave, he awarded PhDs to everybody. Whether he is a literate or whether he is illiterate, irrespective of that consideration, he is just awarding PhDs. Only thing is that one has to come and sign up. That's the only consideration. Just approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and appeal for the degree. And although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so freely distributing this mercy, but very few people are willing to accept it. But those who are accepting it, they're very fortunate. And what they're getting the highest spiritual benefit. So, going to read the next paragraph.
Lord Chaitanya and two brothers, Dabrikas and Sakar Malik, in a village known as Ramakiri, in the district of Mali, and after that, meeting the brothers, decided to retire from government service and join Lord Chaitanya. Dabrikas, who was later to become Rupa Goswami, retired from his post and collected all the money he had accumulated during his service. It is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that his accumulated savings in gold coins equaled millions of dollars and filled a large boat. He divided the money in a very exemplary manner, which should be followed by devotees in particular and by humanity in general. 50% of his accumulated wealth was distributed to the Krishna conscious persons, namely the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. 25% was distributed to relatives, and 25% was kept against emergency expenditures and personal difficulties. Later on, when Sakar Malik also proposed to retire, the Nawab was very much agitated and put him into jail. But Sakar Malik, who was later to become Shiva Sanatan Goswami, took advantage of his brother's personal money, which had been disposed with a village banker, and escaped from the prison of Hussein Shah. In this way, both brothers joined Lord Chaitanya's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, so the activities of an exalted personality is always exemplary. Like, Rupa Goswami, when he retired from his family life, you see, he was a very rich person. Like, he was the finance minister of Hussein Shah, the king of Bengal. And at that time, Bengal was the most prosperous country, prosperous place. Naturally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared, so that place must be most opulent. And the king of that place must have been very, very wealthy, and his ministers were very opulent too. But when Rupa Goswami retired, one interesting thing we note here is that when he retired, he didn't take any money. Although he was so rich, and he gave half the money to his family, had accumulated, he distributed, yeah, 50% accumulated wealth distributed to Krishna conscious person. The half the money was given to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. 1/4 of it was given to his family members. Nowadays, and this is a sign of sincerity, of one's purpose. Like nowadays also we find, sometimes we find some householders, rich householders, they want to retire. That reminds me, when Prabhupada was here in Mayapur, one very wealthy man actually came and he wanted to become a devotee. From Calcutta he came. And he was in kind of, in somehow, in some sort of connection, some sort of appreciation he had for Srila Prabhupada. And he left his, he was a jeweler, a very wealthy man. And he came to Mayapur. And Prabhupada didn't really mind it. Prabhupada was excited about it. And his family members, his wife, so soon his family members came and started to persuade him to go back. And he didn't want to go back. And so when we informed that to Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, he's not serious. Although he pretended to be so, now so committed, convinced about Krishna consciousness, he wanted to join. But Prabhupada's comment was that he's not serious. And then Prabhupada mentioned that, so he came here, gave all his money to his family members, and he came without anything. Like if he was serious, then he would have brought his money to ISKCON, given it to Srila Prabhupada, and used it in Krishna's service. But he didn't do that. He just offered it to his family members. Like, and that's how Prabhupada assessed his sincerity, that he was not serious. Because if he really loved Krishna, then, and if he really understood Prabhupada's mission, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, then he would have given all his money to this mission. Anyway, so the point I was trying to make is that nowadays what happens, like how do we figure out the sincerity of a person? If he comes with his money, he not only comes alone, but he brings his assets and offers it to Krishna. Then only we have to understand that he's serious. But if he leaves his money for his family members, and comes here bare hand, barefoot, that is not an indication of sincerity. Rupa Goswami pointed out, you can see the sincerity of his commitment. Like, he gave not only 100% of his wealth to his family members, not even 50% of his wealth to his family members. 50% he gave to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. Those days, the preaching mission was not prominent. Otherwise, he would have given 100% to that preaching mission. For preaching, money is needed. But Rupa Goswami was retiring to Vrindavan. He didn't need any money there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching mission didn't start at that time. That massive preaching mission that started with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and then Srila Prabhupada. That mission is very different from that time. They retired, okay, gave the money to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas in donation, then 25% to his family members, and 25% he deposited with a local banker, just for some future need, and which had been clear very soon how that money was needed, because Sanatana Goswami was arrested. When he also wanted to retire, the Muslim king was very upset. And when he tried to persuade him to continue, but when he refused to continue, then the king arrested him. And he went to fight a battle with King Prataprudra in Orissa. And he thought when he would come back, he would deal with Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami used that money to bribe the jail keeper and escaped. So that money was needed. So that is how we can see the sincerity of one's purpose. Okay, you can read.
Rupa Goswami first met Lord Chaitanya at Raya, Allahabad, India. And on the Dashashamitha Badinghar of that holy city, the Lord instructed him continually for 10 days. The Lord particularly instructed Rupa Goswami on the science of Krishna consciousness. This teaching of Lord Chaitanya to Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada are narrated in our book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya.
Okay. So, Sri Rupa Goswami, after retiring from home, he went to Vrindavan. He was going towards Vrindavan. And then on Prayag, which is present-day Allahabad, where Ganga and Jamuna and Saraswati, these three rivers, meets. It's called Prayag. And there is a very famous ghat called Dashashamedh Ghat, the place where 10 horse sacrifices were performed. Therefore, 10 days, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Srila Rupa Goswami. And Prabhupada is saying that that instruction to Rupa Goswami has been included in his teaching of Lord Chaitanya. Would you like to read next?
Later, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada elaborated the teachings of the Lord with profound knowledge of revealed scriptures and authoritative references from various Vedic literatures. Srila Srinivas Acharya describes in his prayers to the six Goswamis that they were all highly learned scholars, not only in Sanskrit but also in foreign languages such as Persian and Arabic. They were scrutinizingly studying all the Vedic scriptures in order to establish the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the authorized principles of Vedic knowledge. The present Krishna consciousness movement is also based on the authority of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. We are therefore generally known as Rupanugas or followers in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. It is only for our guidance that Srila Rupa Goswami prepared his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is now presented in the form of The Nectar of Devotion. Persons engaged in Krishna consciousness movement may take advantage of this great literature and be very solidly situated in Krishna consciousness.
Very good. So, the six Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assigned them with two responsibilities: to establish Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching on the basis of scriptural evidences. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not present anything in writing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just gave Krishna prema, Krishna consciousness. But it was necessary to substantiate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And the Goswamis actually took up that responsibility. It has been described by Srinivas Acharya, Nana Shastra Vicharenaika Nipunam Saddharma Sangstham. Lokanam hitakarino tribhuvane manno sharana. Nana shastra vicharena. Consulting various scriptures, all the scriptures, they have established one sadharma, the eternal dharma, eternal religious principle, which is Krishna consciousness, which was given by Sri Chaitanya. So the six Goswamis did that. Another, this is one responsibility. The other was to discover the places of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. They stayed in Vrindavan most of the time and just they wrote. And Rupa Goswami presented Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, the essence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings through various books, and one of them is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And Nectar of Devotion is the summary study and translation of that book. Nectar of Devotion. So, the translation, Prabhupada kept it simple, the title. Nectar means nectar, amrit. So, Bhakti, Rasa, Amrita, Sindhu. Now, Bhakti, Rasa, Amrita, and Sindhu, four words. So, Prabhupada actually took these two concepts. Bhakti and nectar. And Bhakti and Amrita. The nectar of devotion. And it is further elaborated on these two other concepts. Bhakti has been elaborated with rasa. And then there's not only just the bhakti rasa, but it is a sindhu, it's an ocean of bhakti rasa. So, yes, now you can read the next.
Bhakti means devotional service. Every service has some attractive feature which drives the cultivator progressively on and on. Everyone in this world is perpetually engaged in some sort of service. And the impetus for such service is the pleasure we derive from it. Driven by affection for his wife and children, a family man works day and night. A philanthropist works in the same way for love of the greater family. And a nationalist for the cause of his country and countrymen. That force which drives the philanthropist, the householder and the nationalist is called rasa, or a kind of mellow or relationship whose taste is very sweet. Bhakti rasa is a mellow different from the ordinary rasa enjoyed by mundane workers. Mundane workers labor very hard day and night in order to relish a kind of rasa which is understood as sense gratification. The relish or taste of the mundane rasa does not long endure. And therefore, mundane workers are always apt to change their position of enjoyment. A businessman is not satisfied by working the whole week. Therefore, wanting a change for the weekend, he goes to a place where he tries to forget his business activities. Then, after the weekend is spent in forgetfulness, he again changes his position and resumes his actual business activities. Material engagement means accepting a particular status for some time and then changing it. This position of changing back and forth is technically known as bhogatya, which means a position of alternating sense enjoyment and renunciation. A living entity cannot steadily remain either in sense enjoyment or in renunciation. Change is going on perpetually, and we cannot be happy on either state because of our eternal constitutional position. Sense gratification does not endure for long, and it is therefore called chapal sukh or flickering happiness. For example, an ordinary family man who works very hard day and night and is successful in giving comforts to the members of his family, thereby produces a kind of mellow. But his whole advancement of material happiness immediately terminates along with his body as soon as his life is over. Death is therefore taken as a representative of God for the atheistic class of men. The devotee realizes the presence of God by devotional service, whereas the atheist realizes the presence of God in the state of death. At death, everything is finished and one has to begin a new chapter of life in a new situation, perhaps higher or lower than the last one. In any field of activity, political, social, national or international, the result of our actions will be finished with the end of life. That is sure.
Okay, So here Prabhupada is actually giving us the understanding of the title, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti means devotional service. Rasa means mellow. Rasa is some sweet taste. The taste that is relishable, that is called rasa. Are you familiar with rasagulla? So that is rasa. It has a sweet taste, that's why it's attractive. So bhakti is attractive because it's a rasa, it's a mellow, which is relishable. And it is nectarian. Now amrita, this word, although the English translation of amrita is nectar, but it has a deeper connotation. It is this word amrita is coming from the word, root word mrittu. Mrittu means death. And amrita means that negates death. This preface, a indicates negation. Like for example, mal means dirt, amal means no dirt, pure. Mrittu means death, amrita means no cessation, no end. What happens with death? At death everything ends. But amrita means negation of death, no end, endless. And Sindhu means an ocean. So, Prabhupada is pointing out that Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti is a rasa and it is endless. It's uninterrupted. There is no interruption. There is no end to it. And as opposed to material rasa, people may be enjoying some rasa, but then he gets tired of it. Like for the example that Prabhupada gave of a businessman. Businessman's business is to make money. And there is some rasa in making money. One enjoys making money, touching money, spending money, right? But although there is some rasa in that, in making money, but he gets tired of it. From Monday to Friday he makes money, and then he becomes so tired of it, that on Saturday he just runs out of that situation and goes to some place which is completely different from that. He retires from that activity. But Bhakti Rasa is not like that. Bhakti rasa, there is no end to its relish. Bhakti rasa, we can continuously enjoy day after day, month after month, year after year, life after life. That is the difference between mundane rasa and bhakti rasa. So here we are actually getting the taste of some mellow that is so sweet and so relishable that we'll never be satisfied. The more we relish it, the more we will want to enjoy it. So the craving for this rasa will continue to increase as we make advancement. I think we have to go a little faster because we have quite a few and we already gone on for about 1 hour, a little more than 1 hour. So anyway, since you have read all these, I will briefly discuss about some salient points. So Prabhupada made that point here. Bhakti rasa, however, the mellow relished in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, does not finish with the end of life. It continues perpetually and is therefore called Amrita, that which does not die but exists eternally. This is confirmed in all Vedic literatures. Bhagavad Gita says that a little advancement in Bhakti Rasa can save the devotee from greatest danger. How? Bhakti is so wonderful that when you execute this bhakti, like service to Krishna, devotional service to Krishna for his pleasure, Krishna becomes grateful to the devotee. And Krishna feels that he is not capable of reciprocate properly. That's how indebted Krishna becomes about bhakti. So that's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has pointed out, Salpam appasya dharmasya trayate manato bhayat. Even a little execution of this dharma, of this devotional service to Krishna, will save us, free us from a great danger. Whereas the mundane activities, materialistic activities, so here we are actually coming in two distinct considerations. Material activities and spiritual activities. The bhakti is the highest spiritual activity. And mundane activities are material activities. What is the result of material activities? Everybody becomes responsible to the reactions of his actions. Whether it's good or bad, both actions tie one down to the material nature. So that is the problem with this mundane activity. Even good activities will tie us down to the material nature. Because good activities will give us the good result and we have to enjoy it. There's no way out. Of course, people don't mind when it is of enjoyment. But still it is a bondage. So we have two considerations, mundane activities and spiritual activities. The mundane activities will come to an end. And mundane activities will become boring at some point. But that will not be the case with spiritual activity. Because this relationship with Krishna has a newer and newer enjoyment. Therefore, there is no room for getting bored. That will be explained later on. But the main point is, mundane activities will cause us to be tied down to the material nature. Prabhupada is explaining that point. A living entity is offered a particular type of body as a result of his action in the present body. The way we are acting in the present body, accordingly we'll get our next body. But that is not the case with the spiritual activities. If our body at present is engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness, then it is guaranteed that we'll have at least a human body. Why? Generally, why will you get a human body? Why it is guaranteed? Because devotional service never ends. Devotional service perpetuates. Devotional service continues. When one becomes engaged in devotional service, he gets a chance to get engaged in devotional service again. So in this life, if one has rendered devotional service and he dies without completing his entire course, then he will get a chance to continue with his devotional service in his next life. And in order to do that, he has to have a human body. So that's why Prabhupada so emphatically pointing out that when one is engaged in devotional service, then he will get at least he'll get a human body in his next life, and he'll get a chance to continue further in devotional service. Now, isn't it a wonderful option? Oh, yeah. So, the eternal engagement of Bhakti Rasa can be understood by a serious student upon studying the nectar of devotion. Adaptation of Bhakti Rasa or Krishna consciousness will immediately bring one to an auspicious life free from anxieties and will bless one with transcendental existence, thus minimizing the value of liberation. So this is what bhakti does. It reduces the value of liberation. One becomes, you'll come across that bhakti, one of the qualities of bhakti, it is moksha lagit loguta krit. Moksha means liberation. Loguta means makes it insignificant. Even liberation becomes insignificant compared to bhakti. So now Prabhupada is pointing out that rasa is actually a loving exchange. And every living entity has a tendency to love. Even a tiger has a tendency to love. Such a ferocious animal. But towards the cubs of the tigress and the tiger, how do they feel? They feel love. A snake, such a frightening creature. But even the snake loves. So this love is there in every living entity. The propensity to love. And it is through the love that we want to derive the joy. Joy and love are interrelated. Joy is derived out of love. Real joy is derived out of love. That's why in the material nature, love is so much desirable. Love stories are so popular. And everybody, love, this is the word that has been most used in the vocabulary. Like, everyone is talking about love. I love you, you love me, don't you love me, and so forth. Why? Because everybody wants to be joyful and everybody tries to enjoy through the loving exchange. But Prabhupada is pointing out that in this material nature they don't know what love is. In the material nature they do not know who is the real object of love. And the real object of love is Krishna. And until and unless that love is reposed to Krishna, the heart will not be satisfied. On the other hand, the moment the love is offered to Krishna, then that we become completely content. So, this bhakti rasa, the ultimate culmination of love is in this bhakti. And what is the meaning of bhakti? Bhakti means love to Krishna. Love for Krishna. So in this way, Srila Rupa Goswami has very scientifically presented the culture of Krishna consciousness through the nectar of devotion. And Prabhupada is pointing out, the nectar of devotion will teach us how to turn the one switch that will immediately brighten everything, everywhere. One who does not know the method is missing the point of life. And then, towards the later part of his preface, Prabhupada is pointing out that the modern human civilization, materialistic civilization, has made a massive advancement, and they are leading a very comfortable life with a lot of prosperity and comfort, enjoyment. But still people are not happy. Because, why people are not happy? because they don't know how to who to love. So materially they may have made a lot of progress, but they missed out on that main point. Who to love? They want to love somebody and they want to be loved by somebody. But all those loving relationships are ending in total frustration. Why? Because they do not know who to love. And that's why Prabhupada is saying, the nectar of devotion will teach us who to love. And bhakti actually means love. The word bhakti, the real meaning of bhakti is love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An expression of that love through devotional service. The nectar of devotion, I am appealing, Srila Prabhupada is appealing to such confused men to learn the art of devotional service as directed in the nectar of devotion. And I am sure that the fire of material existence burning within their hearts will be immediately extinguished. The root cause of our dissatisfaction is that our dormant loving propensity has not been fulfilled despite our great advancement in the materialistic way of life. Our dormant loving propensity hasn't been properly fulfilled. The nectar of devotion will give us practical hints how we can live in this material world perfectly engaged in devotional service and thus fulfill all our desires in life and the next. The nectar of devotion is not presented to condemn any way of materialistic life, but the attempt is to give information to religionists, philosophers, and people in general how to love Krishna. So here Prabhupada is making another very important point, that nectar of devotion, the teaching of the nectar of devotion is not telling us to reject anything. Rather, simply accept Krishna as the object of love. Whatever you are doing, you can do that. If you are a businessman, if you are a student, if you are whatever you may be, if you are a man, woman, old, young, you don't have to change your position. You simply have to bring in Krishna into your life and offer your love to him. So then finally Prabhupada is saying in the preface, the nectar of devotion is specifically presented for persons who are now engaged in the Krishna consciousness movement. So this book is very important for all the devotees. Other people may not understand it, but the devotees who have accepted the process, those who have accepted, those who have understand understood the value of this process and have accepted Krishna as the ultimate object of their love, for them this nectar of devotion is absolutely essential. So in this way, Prabhupada ended the preface of the nectar of devotion. And finally Prabhupada thanked those who helped him print this book and distribute it to the people in general. Hare Krishna. So, time flies. I hope you all are not feeling tired, or you're tired? Little bit. Okay. And so should we give 5 minutes break now? Okay. Hare Krishna. So, in 5 minutes,